This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Nick with us. And Nick, if you can, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your company. And I would love to hear your story on that.
Sure. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. My name is Nick Froelich. I am the founder and current CEO of Ceritasa. Started Ceritasa in 2005. So it is now 20 years old. And we are a custom software development company. Some call us software consultants. The word is used kind of interchangeably, but we basically build custom software for both startups, but mostly businesses. We either build them from scratch based on the requirements of the customer, or we help support their existing, perhaps they have existing software, and they want another developer or need another company, and we go and support them. And so we've been doing that successfully for 20 years now. It's a fun, challenging. We've been growing. And we have lots of happy customers and a few not so happy, but we can't make everyone happy. I am a first generation. My parents immigrated from Germany, working class, I guess the reason I got into software is my senior year in high school, they got an Apple IIe and I learned how to program in BASIC, and that was fascinating. And then I got a Macintosh my first year in college, and I was just so fascinated. I'm not really a developer. I've never gotten that deep, but I'm enthusiastic about software. I know how to use it. I know how it can be utilized in business. And I can speak with developers and with a team of great developers, I've been able to leverage that passion into a business that helps other people utilize software as much as I've been able to do in my life. So that's really the whole origin from a very high level and simplistic way. But it's been there's a path and a journey along the way, but it's been fascinating. And what I really love is that it doesn't get boring, because technology constantly serves up new things that are exciting, which opens up the door for more things and actually creates more demand out there, because now businesses need to utilize this new technology, and gives me an opportunity to give that to them and play with it. So, you know, when the new VR headsets come out, oh, it's my job. I get to buy the first one and try it out. So that's still kind of fun.
That's great. Appreciate sharing color on this. The build versus buy is a big topic. Many people think about it. They make a decision. Sometimes they are so happy they made that decision that way, but sometimes they regret it after some years and spending money. It's not either or. Sometimes can be a blend of things that you have to buy part of it and build part of it. I understand that part as well, and I have seen it many times. From your perspective, you have lived there, you have experienced it firsthand. And when you look at it, I wanted to, from your perspective, tell us the pro and con of build or buy, and why you build it sometimes rather than people go and just buy something.
Right. So this has evolved over time. If you remember the early days, there were retail stores called Egghead Software, these other ones, and you never built your own unless you were some kind of hacker. So you go there and you buy the software off the shelf, it's shrink wrapped, and it's on a disk. So over time, with different programming languages and tools, people could start building their own software, and out of that grew the idea of these SaaS products. So that's where companies come in and they build the software and they allow other people to license it and use it. And there's so many of them. No matter what your needs are, you could probably find something out there that you don't, it's not yours. You don't purchase it. You don't download it, but you get to use it. It's like a license. And those are very popular. And there's big SaaS like CRMs. Salesforce is a SaaS. I would say Quicken or QuickBooks is a SaaS. And for many cases, they're an ideal fit. And if what it offers, like a CRM or a sales tool, if it what it gives you, if that fits perfectly for your organization, it's great. Why would you want to build something that's already been built, tens and thousands of development hours and iterations, and it's probably going to work perfectly. So why do that? The only downside a little bit some people think is, well, first of all, you don't control it. So they could change the prices. And if you become dependent on that software to run your business, all of a sudden they just say, okay, now we're going to charge this much. Or the company that built that, some of these SaaS companies that build it, they build this hopefully to be acquired by somebody else so they can cash out. So now let's say Adobe owns this software and they have other ideas and they're going to raise rates because they don't want the middle market. So they're going to price them out because they don't want the support on that. So all of a sudden, you don't control that. And also your data doesn't live with you necessarily. Some people are very concerned about their data. Where is it? Well, it's usually on the servers of the company that run this SaaS software. So that's the biggest, I think, issue that some people have businesses, the control of their data, it's a control issue. And the second thing is, if the software does not match your business processes, it forces you to adapt your business processes to the functionality of the SaaS software. Mm-hmm. And if most businesses have a secret sauce, their way of doing something that makes them better, mm-hmm. more competitive, however you set up that workflow. Well, if the SaaS software doesn't support that, it doesn't allow you to use your secret sauce as much. And that's why if you build something custom, you can build it exactly to your business flow so that you can take advantage of your special sauce and you can own the data and you don't have to be afraid of those license fees that go up. But there is a cost of developing your own software. So I think those are the pros and cons. The cost of a SaaS product or not developing is you can have it immediately and there's no upfront costs, right? Just right away you can start using it. If you have a small need, 2 or 3 people, it just makes sense. But then you become dependent on it. So pros and cons. It just really depends on your situation.
What about the maintenance part of it? I mean, we talked about building part of it, but now, as you said, there are so many SaaS applications out there. So almost for everything you can think of, there is an app. But as you said, this is more a subscription. It's not like perpetually you're just buying it and owning it. It's more you are subscribing to it. And you mentioned already some of the changes that may happen in the future that may impact you, even if you think, that's the software I like and I wanted to use it. Even on your side, as a customer side, the expectation, the requirements, the way they wanted to use it, it may evolve as well. So when it comes, let's forget about day one. and it's already in place. You have it, either you build it or you bought it. It's in place. Let's talk about now the next years.
Right.
What are the kind of, what are the pros and cons on that part from the maintenance perspective? What are the differences you should expect?
Yeah, that's a great question. So definitely, if you build your own software custom, you own this and you need to maintain it just like anything else you have, any other car. If you don't maintain it, it's not going to live that long. Code gets stale. It's called code debt. So because technology changes, you build your code, but technology will continue to evolve. And what I mean by technology is the underlying frameworks that you're using, let's say Python or the libraries or the APIs or your dependence on third-party APIs, they're going to update stuff and you need to stay along with that. So what it means is it's ongoing maintenance. You're constantly taking a look at it, keeping it updated, because if you don't do that, you'll get to an end of life, which means it just will not be compatible anymore or may stop working altogether. Or the cost of bringing it all the way up is prohibitive. And we've taken these projects on before where they come to us and they say, look at this, it costs so much to maintain this, and our developer is it's it, this is every little change is so many hours. Can you take a look at it? We look at it, we say, well, we know why. You have so much code debt here that the smallest change is going to take hours. I mean, tens and twenties of hours. We will not take this on in maintenance. This needs a whole new rewrite. And they're all like, what do you mean? It's like, it's too late. So regular ongoing maintenance needs to be done. It's not that scary as long as you just don't let it back up. What you want is you want the same developer there that has a knowledge base. You don't want somebody coming in new all the time and trying to figure it out. It's like having your regular mechanic that knows your car and doing regular. How much you need just depends on how big and complex the software is. So you could look at it the equivalent of license fees. You're going to pay a license fees for a SaaS. You're going to pay maintenance over here. So, but the other part of that is as new technologies come, if you own your own software, you can decide to incorporate that new thing in there. Your decision. You can take a look at it and say, we want to do that. If you're reliant on a SaaS, all you can do is ask them. It's like, are you guys gonna, start supporting mobile? Well, no, that's not in our game plan. It's like, well, we need that. So you're trapped again here. So there is an advantage when it's your own, not only maintenance on just keeping it status quo, but it allows you to take advantage of new technologies if you want to. Or, as you mentioned, if your internal workflow changes because you found a way to do it, you can make that change on your software. And on the SaaS, you may have to do a workaround and say, okay, well, we'll have to do a manual process here and adapt it. So it's a trade-off. It really depends on how different your processes, your needs are from any given solution out there already. And the size also, if you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of users, those license fees are probably going to be more than the maintenance you will need to maintain your system. So.
The other trend that is everywhere, not just in software, but even in banking, you go to ATM nowadays rather than go to bank. You go to your mobile phone to do your banking rather than go to the branch. The same self-service concept applies everywhere in our life, including software. There has been this movement for decades, nothing new about it. Since I do remember, always people try to develop and bring these low code or no code or app builder tools to the market, and what it does and the promise behind them always have been to deliver what you want without you write a code, meaning that we have built an engine and then you take it and then drag and drop and you build something very quickly. Well, I would say we are making progress slowly but surely. But I don't know how many more years it may take to really get to the promise of it, because for easy applications, it may work. But we have experience for more sophisticated and real life applications. Normally, still, you need to get into more sophisticated environment rather than just using an easy. What have been your experience with those low code, no code, and have you been able to utilize them, or your customers utilize them, or from your perspective, you have a different take on them?
So one of the experiences we had with that low code, no code is the hybrid mobile apps. This promise of write it once and deploy it in two different environments, right? So that's a little lower code, right? And the customers want it because normally if you're going to build an iOS app and an Android app, they're two different languages. One's Java, one's Swift. And it's double the cost, basically. You can have the design. They should have two different designs because they have different protocols for that. And, you know, the clients are demanding because they've heard this. It's like, why don't we just build it on this hybrid and then build once, deploy twice? We don't do that because we've taken on too many projects where we've seen they do that. And they come to us and they said, why isn't this working? Why isn't this working? It's like, because all this magic that you want on these platforms, they're all in this black box that we don't know, which we don't have control over. Because you don't know where the limitations are until you hit those limitations. It's like a glass ceiling and you don't know how high it is. And you don't know how good this hybrid low code is at interfacing with stored cache memory on each device or connectivity because they use different operating systems. So and they promote them. You're right. I mean, they promote them hard and people don't understand that there is no magic because when we do custom software, we take a look at all those requirements and design it in a way that glass ceiling's not there. And even if we hit that glass ceiling, if we own the code, if we wrote the code, we can resolve that. But the low code, no code, by definition, you don't have access to that. So it's not there yet. It's interesting to watch, you know, with AI and you know, that build code or even that. I think you need an orchestra. You need a composer. You need, these are instruments, but they don't play themselves. You really need the whole ensemble from the writing of everything. And that still takes experienced developers. So, It has its limitations, right? So the low code, I always like to use metaphors for people. I like to use cars and race cars and, you know, a snap together model of a Indy car is never going to be as good as the ones, how they build them and the modifications they make and everything. It can't be. So short lived, it's great. But it's short lived. So.
So 2 points out of this particular explanation that you had comes to my mind. One is, have you been asked by someone to develop this custom software for us because our needs are very specific and it has to be a purposely built solution, but also give us a composer on top of that so we can customize it without coming back to you for every change we have, because that can be the combination that you build the software, but also you give them a composer, meaning that you are actually building a software with a no code or low code tool built in for them. You may say, well, that would be a lot of work, but in order to do that and may defeat the purpose of the kind of, you know, staying in budget and time and everything, but I just wonder if what's your take on it? And then I will ask the second point after that.
Well, that opens up a whole bunch of a can of worms because money, time, quality are the three stools, right? You can't, or the three pegs of a stool. No, I think I'm using that metaphor wrong. You can't have it cheap and high quality and fast. It just, so So you're talking about the development side now, and cost is always an issue. As an example, you know, the right thing to do is build auto testing into every code you write, but that's going to double your cost immediately for no immediate benefit. People don't like to do it, but it has long-term savings. So I'm not sure if I understand the question perfectly, what you were saying, but we often hand over, I mean, the customer owns the code. It's theirs. Yeah. They can do anything they want to with it if they have the skills and abilities to do that. And sometimes they do, but often they prefer not to because it's cost prohibitive. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're it's their product. It's you know, we'll draw a line somewhere. We will not. So it's difficult sometimes. Sometimes we have clients that they want it done cheaply. They said, look, I don't need it all perfect. I just, you know, I said, what do you want? You want us to, skip corners or, how do we write? How do we do it wrong? Right. Or,
yeah,
but we'll design something. We'll say, okay, we're not going to spend too much on design or UI UX. And, you know, we'll give you the bare minimums, you know, and then we deliver and they look at it and says, well, I mean, where's the authentication or recover password? It's like, I mean, we can go on forever. Do you want us to verify how secure their password is? I mean, you're asking for a lot of things, nice things here now, but they think that that's just normal. It's like there's an expectation thing there. So it's very, very difficult. We won't do it to deliver your cheap version because you're not going to be happy because there's no explanation for what cheap version is or minimum viable product or overused word because there's so anyway, I took a wrong path there somewhere, but
no, I understand. Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, I was thinking very idealistically that if I write the software, but also I develop some kind of tool for them, maybe to change the metadata behind the scenes so they can configure some of the things on the software on their own, right, and come to me. That way, maybe it makes them a little bit, not completely independent, but maybe a little bit independent. So that way, but automatically that increases the scope of the application. And
tremendously, you know, more than double. I mean, that's so cost prohibitive. And then you can't forecast every situation that they'd like to change. And just like the common rule is if we do that, the one thing they're going to want to be able to control and change, we didn't build, right? Because you can't. So
No, very understandable. In fact, sometimes I use this metaphor that if somebody asks me to build a pie chart or bar chart based on some data for them, it takes a few hours to do it. And give them the software and say, add the filters and everything and change the data on this pie chart, bar chart. But if they ask me, now give me something that I can build my own chart and type of the chart can be any type of chart I want and I can bring my own data, then that can go for years and still I'm not done with the project because every time I show them, they say, no, I need also this. I need this visualization. Right. I need that filter and I need this type of data and then I need to load, you know, be able to connect to these 10 different sources of data. That can be totally different scope than 2 hours of work because it's a more kind of building on the fly. I'm building a builder rather than I'm building something specific to what they want. So you're right. If you can really define the requirements and stick to it and it's just fixed, it just changes the whole scope, budget, time, everything. And even quality of the software can be much higher versus very fluid and I want to change everything. So now it brings me to the second point I wanted to ask you. We live in a Gen AI world. And some people now talk about AI will write the code, so there's no need for bringing any other programmer in the future or near future, I would say. Some people believe in 2, 3 years, 4 years down the road, then you just talk to AI engine, it writes the code for you and you're done. I have seen a real example that somebody showed me that he doesn't know how to program that much, but he showed me a web page and a simple app that he has been able to construct with AI by just talking and prompting and building that web page. That looked pretty nice, actually. But I should admit, it was extremely simple. Now, what's your take on it? That, you know, within your world, would you see such a world, and would you see such a thing that, you know, maybe writing code is something in the past, or you see no, writing code, you know, has changed for the last 30 years and it will change in the next 30 years, but it doesn't go anywhere. Which school of thoughts are you catering to?
Well, it's a really good question. And, you know, I don't know, but we do talk about it with our director of development, and we're very involved in trying to use all these tools. We, you know, we have about 250 developers, so we have a nice test case there. I mean, we can do a lot of things there. But anything that, I mean, if I'm going to talk about the future, I think every time one of these AI things come out again, I think the world is floored, right? So I don't know what it's going to be, right? But, you know, you ask any developer, of course, they're going to say, there's no way that anybody's going to be able to do my skill as good as me. So you have that bias built in. But I will tell you that we do believe pretty strongly that the junior developer will be able to be replaced. We'll need less junior developers, but we need a senior. We can't just deploy code without looking at it. I mean, we're not at that phase now, and I don't think we will be for a while, where you just have them do the task unsupervised and give it to a client. So you need somebody that is senior level that can look at it. And I think that the AIs will still hallucinate. It's all based on inputs and stuff. And if something's not working, you need somebody that can go in there and double check things, or make sure there's no inadvertent bad something in there. So we need supervision. But right now it's helping with documentation. So automatically documents code, which is something that takes time and effort that we don't necessarily want to charge the customer, but it's really a long-term benefit because it's easy for anybody to look at it. So that's kind of automatic. Automatic testing is something we're trying to incorporate in there. Like I told you before, clients don't like to pay for the auto testing because it's just behind the scenes and it costs more money. But, you know, we're trying to make it an offering that we can give to them for free, perhaps, you know, as a benefit, because we can use it that way. So just it using these AI tools to make us better quality work or more efficient in our work. But the things we build are complex. So I agree with you. You know, it's easy to do something simple, but when you start integrating with various APIs and the rules with that, and then complex systems, you even creating the prompts to make sure that we build a system that's scalable and secure and everything, that's going to take an engineer with experience. So I don't see that going away. But again, I'm floored. I just used the new ChatGPT-4 and I did some images. Like I took a group image. I live on a canal out here, and I said, have a breaching orca in the canal. And it was so real. I sent it to some of my kids and some other people. And, you know, 70% of them said, I can't believe there's an orca in warm water in Florida. I mean, they didn't get it. You know, there's some people that get it right away, right? That work at the company. They're like, damn, that's good AI. But I mean, really. So I'm floored, and we will be floored again. And I don't know what it's going to bring. So, I don't imagine the day that a business owner or a business without technical experience, the whole experience, I'm not talking about development, but is going to be able to build a custom software workflow system for it, because it's a lot more than just the coding. It's the architecture, it's the design, and I don't see. So let me give you another example. The reason I really created this company is because I was a businessman first. I knew business unrelated to technology. I think like a CEO. I think on the sales side. I think that way. But I love computers. But I could speak to developers. So, and I saw these common issues where, you know, a business owner says, hey, I need this form that does X, Y, Z. And developer would do it and give it to the business owner. And he's like, well, no, this is not what I meant. This is not working. And, you know, developers are like, I built exactly what you said. So there's this language, there's developer talk and there's business talk. And the justification for my business is I'm going to be that translator. I can talk business. I can hire the developers, and technology will always change. It always be needed. That was my belief. There's always going to be new demand because there's new technology, and that gap will not be filled. I don't think that AI, even though it's easier to talk to, is going to fill that gap for quite some time, because I don't think that a non-technical business can knows the prompts and can communicate that. I just don't believe that. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Maybe a robot calls you and say, I'm a customer. Now I need to for you to build me a software, because robots need software applications too to operate. So sometimes if they wanted to get information. So I personally expect to see actually on both sides, the AI. AI as a customer and AI on the other side helping us to be more productive on the technology side. So gradually we may see both sides kind of, you know, getting some kind of boost or help or, you know,
I'd love
so
it.
That would be interesting.
I'd love it if I could buy a robot that could do my job better than me. And I just buy it and own it and it works for me, but I get paid. All I got to do is plug it in. I'd love that.
but I was talking about even a robot being your customer. I mean, a customer, right? So the robot can be also the app consuming kind of entity, because if I'm a robot, and I have the intelligence to make a decision, still I need information and I need those automation and applications in order to really develop the, you know, my thoughts around the information I get from that. So my take is that now we are at the age that we may actually see machines using applications, not just human using applications and software solutions. So what are those extra capabilities that we need to build in order to be consumable by these kind of machines rather than just be consumable by human? So far, we have been sitting on the decision-making seat and the technology has been facilitating the information so we can make a better decision. But what if now machines come and say, I can also make a decision, maybe an easier decision, but I make faster, better decision on some of these. And then now we need to cater to those as well. So I expect to see some of these applications be consumed by those robots very soon, in the coming next 5 years or so. But see what happens. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. And it was great discussion with you, Nick. And I'm glad we connected.
All right. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it as well.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.